The Eddie B. Sit edition and audio series of the Talmud Bavli.
Masechet Shekalim has been dedicated by Dr. Isaac Meddeb and his wife Lily in memory of Moshe ben Nachel Man. Ruach Hashem Tanihenu Began Eden. We hope that the learning of the 22 Dapim of Masechet Shekalim will be a Ilui Neshama for the Niftar Moshe ben Rachel. Tihi Nishmato Tzerura B'Tzor HaChayim. Amen. Daf Yud Zayin. Today's daf has been dedicated by Tuvi Asis, one of the charter members of our Daf HaYomi class. May God bless him with continued success. Aslaha V'Arvaha Bechol Maaseh Yadav. Amen. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hakam Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We begin today's daf on Tet Zayin Amud Bet, and we begin three lines from the bottom, Halacha Bet, at the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, Hechan hayu ishtahavayot ha'elu. We learned in the previous Mishnah that when a person would enter the Beit HaMikdash, he would have to bow in 13 different places. So the Gemara wants to know, where are these 13 places? So the Gemara says, Arba besafon. There were four places in the north of the courtyard, the Arba bedarom, and four in the south, Shalosh b'mizrach, three in the east, Ushtayim b'ma'arav, Keneged Shelosha Asar She'arim, which actually they were corresponding to 13 gates that were in the Beit HaMikdash. Now just to get a better picture of it in your art scrolls in 17a2, you actually see a picture of the Beit HaMikdash, what it looked like. So you have over here marked for you the 13 different gates that were on the different sides of the courtyard. So now the Mishnah is going to list us each one. So as we list them, you could refer back to this picture over here in order to get a better picture of where they were. So the Mishnah says, every time that they would walk into one of these gates, they would actually bow first. So they weren't bowing 13 times in a row. So whatever time they walked into one of these 13 gates, they would actually prostrate themselves before walking in. So comes the Mishnah and says, "Derumim simuchim lema'arav." So now we start with the southern gates, beginning with the ones that were closest to the west. Okay, the Beit HaMikdash again goes east-west, really up a ramp. So now we're going to the southern wall, the westerlymost gate. And the Mishnah calls that gate Sha'ar Ha'ilyon, the upper gate. Well, it's obvious why they call it the upper gate, because if we look at our chart here, number one is the gate that is the most highest. It seems that they don't judge the 12th and 13th gate as the highest gates, even though technically they were higher than the first gate, seemingly. They judged the first gate as the highest gate that was on the highest point on the mountain's original elevation. That's why they called it, incidentally, Sha'ar Ha'ilyon. Sha'ar Ha'delik. The gate next to it was called Sha'ar Ha'delik, which literally means the kindling gate. We explained that was opened, a gate that led into the Lishkat Ha'etzim, which was the wood chamber. And they called it because it was that gate that they carried the wood through that gate in order to put it on the Mizbeah. So that's called Sha'ar HaDelek. The third gate was called Sha'ar HaBechorot. That's the gate of the firstborns. So the Mefashim explain, because when a person was bringing a Bechor of an animal, he would bring it through that gate and they would slaughter it in that area in the south side of the Beit HaMikdash. That's gate number three. Gate number four was called Sha'ar HaMayim, water gate. Why was it called the water gate? Delama nekla shemo Sha'ar HaMayim, shebo machnisim selochit shel nisuch HaMayim behag. Remember on Sukkot, they used to fulfill a mitzvah called nisuch HaMayim, but they used to pour a jug of water on the Mizbeah. So they used to get the water, draw the water from Mayana Shilawah, they called it, and then they would bring it through this fourth gate. So since the water of the Sukha Mayim was brought through that gate, it was called Sha'ar HaMayim. Rabbi Eliezer bin Yaakov Omer, Bo HaMayim Mifakim, that it was in that gate that the waters trickle, Va'atidin Niyot Yotzin Mitahat Miftan HaBayit Mabayit. And la'atid lavo, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be water that is going to gush forth from the threshold of the Beit HaMikdash, starting from Sha'ad HaMayim. And the Gemara will elaborate on that water that is going to eventually come up from that gate. Le'ummatam, opposite the southern gates, Besafon, you had the northern side. Simuchim b'Maharav, again, the gate closest to the west was called Sha'ar Yechonya. Sha'ar Yechonya, the Gemara will explain why it was called that. If you remember, Yechonya was one of the kings, the last kings of Israel. Sha'ar HaKorban, okay, that was the next gate next to it. Sha'ar HaNashim, the gate of the Nashim. And Sha'ar HaShir, and the gate of song. So now the Gemara explains them to us. V'lama nekla shemo Sha'ar Yechonya. Why was the gate called the gate of Yechonya? Shebo yatsa Yechonya begaluto. When Yechonya was sent into exile in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, so before he left, he went back to the Beit HaMikdash in order to, so to speak, bid farewell to the Beit HaMikdash and get God's permission to leave into the exile. And it was in that gate that he left into the exile. So they called that gate Sha'ar Yechonya. Now let's just go back. What was Sha'ar HaKorban? So Kodshe Kodashim, that would be like a Korban Hatat. They were slaughtered in the northern side of the Beit HaMikdash, so therefore they would enter through that gate called Sha'ar HaKorban to go bring the Korban. You had Sha'ar HaNashim, that was a lady that would bring a Korban into the Beit HaMikdash. She would have to go through that gate to make simicha on the animal. Certain animals require that the owner has to press their hands down on the animal's head. Ladies as well, according to this opinion, are obligated in simicha, so they would have to do it in the Kodesh. So they would actually go through that gate and press their hands on the animal. Okay, so the Mefarshim explained that this is going according to the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, that says women are not obligated to do simicha, but there's some chot reshut. If they want to make simicha, they can do it voluntarily, so that would be according to that opinion. Then you had Sha'ar HaShir, the musical instruments that were used by the Levi'im that during the Korban, so they were brought via that gate into the courtyard. Okay, comes the Mishnah and continues. Shebemizrah, on the eastern side of the Hechal, you had Sha'ar Nikanor, the gate of Nikanor, Ushne Pishpeshin Hayulo. And next to Sha'ar Nikanor, there were two minor doorways, Ehad Mimino, Ehad Mesimolo. So therefore, that would be considered 9, 10, and 11. Those were three gates themselves. Ushnaim Bima'arav. And then you had two gates on the western side, Velo Haya Lahem Shem. They did not have any names, so therefore they were just number 12 and 13. Now, regarding this Pishpeshim, the Taklin Hatin writes, She'arim ketanim betoch she'arim gedolim ve'gam hem meminyan yudgimos she'arim ve'afagav de'gam le'sha'ar bet ha'moked haya lo pishpesh. Even though there was a gate called Sha'ar HaMoked, that's where they had the wood for the Beit HaMikdash, and there was a little gate next to it, lo hashiv la lefi sheya katan biyoter, because that was very, very small. So therefore, that was insignificant. They didn't count it as one of the gates. These pishpishim seem a little bigger, so therefore they did count as the as separate gates. Now, let's just go back for a second. One of the gates we said on the eastern side was called Sha'ar Nikanor. That was actually the entrance to the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. It had two small doors built into the larger doors of the gate. It was called the Nikanor Gate. because he was the one that saved these gates, like the Gemara tells the Ma'aseh. Comes the Gemara and says, Matnitin Abba Yusa ben Yohanani. Al Mishnah that says that there were 13 gates in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's where the 13 bowings were done, is following the opinion of Abba Yusa ben Yohanan. Da'amar keneged Yud Gimel Sha'arim, that says that the 13 bowings were corresponding to 13 gates. Beram, however, kerabbanan, according to the rabbis in Masechet Midot, Shiva Sha'arim ayu ba'azara, that there were only 7 gates, according to the rabbis, in the Azara. Aldat Rabbanan, according to the rabbis, Hechanei Ushtachavayot Alalu, then where were the 13 bowings, according to them, if there were only 7 gates? Says, Ki'ayid Etanin Taman, like we learned over there, Yud Gimel Piratzot Tayubo, there were 13 breaches in the wall, Shepirtsu Malchei Yavan, that the kings of the Yavan, in the times of the miracle of Hanukkah, they came and breached 13 different holes into the wall in the Beit HaMikdash. The Hazru, the Gadrum, Bene Hashmonaim, and the Hashmonaim family came and reclosed those 13 breaches. The Gadru, Kenegdan, Yud Gimal, the Gazru, Kenegdan, Yud Gimal, Ishtahavaot. So the rabbis made a decree at that time that every time you pass one of those breaches that was later fixed, that you would have to bow in front of them. So the 13, according to the Hachamim, were not in the gates. The 13 were in the former breached walls that were done by the Yevanim. Ketiv, it says, now the Gemara is going to discuss the what the Mishnah said, how eventually the waters are going to come out of the gates of Sha'ar HaMayim, and from there they're going to travel throughout Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, Ketiv, it says regarding what's going to happen at the end of time, it's a pasuk in Zechariah. That it's going to come at the end of times that spring water will issue forth from Yerushalayim. Tane, mebet kodesh hakodashim ad haparochet kekarnei silai vechilai. So the water is going to start to trickle from the kodesh kodashim until the parochet, which is the curtain that separates between the kodesh and the kodesh kodashim. It's going to be a stream of water that's going to be as wide as the antennae of Silai and Kilai. Those are actually types of snails. So their antenna are actually very narrow. So the trickle is going to start the very narrow path, starting from the Kodesh Kodeshim to the Parochet. Menaparochet ad Mizbach HaZahav kekaneh hagabim. And then the water is going to start to widen. And from the Parochet until the Golden Mizbeach, they're going to be as wide as the antennae of locusts, which are a little thicker than that of snails. The Mizbach HaZahav ad Azarot, now from the Mizbach HaZahav until the courtyards, Kehut Shel Sheti, that will be as wide as the thread of warp. That's the thread that they, the weavers have. So that's going to be a little thicker. Now, Min Azarot ad Miftan Abayit Kehut Shel Erev, and from the courtyard until the threshold of the Beit HaMikdash could be even thicker. That's going to be the thread of the roof. That's the other direction. So therefore, you see that the water starts very narrow, is going to widen until that measurement. From that point on, it's going to widen until how much? Kimipi hapach, as broad as water issuing from the mouth of a flask. Comes the Gemara and says, actually, they learned this from a pasuk in Yechezkel, because the pasuk is v'hineh mayim mefakim. So mefakim is melashon pach, that is going to be wide as a pach. So the Gemara now discusses what's going to happen with this stream that's going to flow from the Kodesh Kodashim. Ketiv, it says v'hineh mayim mefakim en akatef aymanit. It says that the water is going to trickle from the right side of the Beit HaMikdash. So it says the man is going to come. The man who's left to the east, he's going to have a measuring stick in his hand, and he's going to measure 1,000 amot of water, and 1,000 amot of water are going to reach what's going to be called me'of sayim, which literally means ankle waters, meaning ad karsuleh, which is it's going to reach ankles, meaning from the Kodesh Kodashim, 1,000 amah of that stream is going to be very shallow waters that are only going to measure up to the ankles. Okay, so it's going to call be meh karsulayim. Vayamud elef. Now they're going to measure the next 1,000 amot. Vayamireni babayim mayim birkayim. They're going to be called knee waters. Ad birkayah. See, the stream is getting deeper. Now already they're going to measure the next 1,000 amot. It's going to reach the knees. Vayamud elef vayamireni meh mutnayim. The next 1,000 amot are going to be measured. They're going to reach the waist. Ad mutnaya. Vikan va'ilach. And from that time on, it's going to be a very strong and furious flow, to the extent the pasuk says, "Vayamud elef nachal asher lo uchal la'avod," which means it's not going to be even able to cross it. Afilu lebiranim gedola enu yochala la'avod bo. Even big ships or boats will not be able to cross it because it's going to be so turbulent. My tama vetzi adir lo yavrenu, because the pasuk says that. It's going to be a place, Yerushalayim is going to be a place of wide rivers and channels that a boat will not be able to travel in it. Vitsi Adir is a mighty vessel, lo yavrenu, will not be able to cross it. Mepenema, why? So the pasuk ends, ki ga'u hamayim me sahu. The end of the pasuk, because the waters swelled, because ki ga'u, the waters are going to swell so high, me sahu. Now what does me sahu mean? Ma'u me'sahu. What does this word mean? Me'sahu. Me'lashut. Which means the current is going to be so strong, it's going to prevent one from swimming across. Which means the Gaon learns as if this is a combination of two words that really are one word. Me'sahu. From swimming. Which means it's going to be so strong that you're not going to be able to swim across. Or actually, that's the way Rav Chaim Kanievsky, you'll forgive me, says that, as if the pasuk says, misahu, from swimming, because of the swift current. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Huna, be'atrin karu leshayata sahvana. He says, in our place, they called swimming sahvana, which is related to the word sahu. He's just showing you another usage of the word sahu, which means to swim. Uperas yadav bekirbo ka'asher yifares hasoche lishot. Another pasuk tells us that Hashem, when he destroys Moab, it says God is going to stretch his hand out like a swimmer who stretches his hand out to swim. So therefore you see ka'asher yifares hasoche lishot. So again you see the word Sohe means to swim. So we just bring another proof to the word mesahu, is waters that are not going to be swimmable because they are going to be very fierce. Gemara now says, Mahu lishot. We have another interpretation of what does this mean, lishot. The Gaon de Vilna's text is actually Mahu mesahu. We're giving a different interpretation of what mesahu means. Till now we learned it means from swimming. But now the Gemara gives a different interpretation. Amar bi Yoseh, ber bi bun, mayin de mitmalelin be'alma. Which means sahu comes from siha, to converse or to talk. Which means the water is going to be so great that it's going to be spoken about in the entire world. Everybody's going to talk about it. Wow, look at this water over here. Look how turbulent it is. So therefore it's called me'sahu. Waters of conversation. That everybody's going to talk about the level of these waters. Gemara says, Ketivit says the pasuk, Bayomahu, Yehye makor niftach lebet David, so on that day, the waters spring out into Yerushalayim. It's going to be for the inhabitants of Jerusalem for hatat and for nida, implying that you're going to be able to use the waters for two rituals. For hatat, that's the performance of the para aduma, the waters, and for nida, for a lady to immerse herself. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman b'shem Rabbi Yonatan, mebet David, Ma'ad Yoshvei Yerushalayim, spanning from the house of David all the way to the dwellers of Yerushalayim, Kesherim Nida ul Hatat, which means it's going to be kasher for a lady who's nida to immerse herself in there, and it's also going to be kasher for Hatat waters. The Hatat waters are the waters that they mixed with the ashes of the Para Adumah. Now the Torah says that it has to be Mayim Hayim. Mayim Hayim is from a natural spring water. And since these waters over here are coming from underground, so that's the din of a Mayim Hayim. And therefore it'll be legal for the Mei Hatat. For that matter, it's also permissible for a Nida to immerse herself in running spring water, which we call that Mayim Hayim. So therefore she will have no problem also to dip in that area. Mikan Va'ilach Mei Ta'arovetim. But from that point on, after the dwellings of Jerusalem, the waters are called mingled waters. That's mingled waters means they're mingled with spring water and rain water. And therefore, kesherim lenida ufsulim the mehatat. Well, a nida can dip in rain water as well. So therefore, it's still going to be kasher for her to dip. However, it's not going to be kasher for mehatat. Because mehatat can only be used by spring water. And therefore now it's going to be mixed with rainwater after that point, so therefore it's not going to be kasher. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar has a different interpretation. Mebet David ve'ad Yoshvei Yerushalayim, from the house of David until the inhabitants of Jerusalem, kesherim lenida ulchatat. Like we said, it'll be kasher for both the nida to immerse and to use for mechatat, because it's considered mayim hayim. Mikan va'ilach, but from that point on, mekatafrisoten, it's going to be considered the water of slopes, because at that point the hills of Jerusalem are there, and therefore the water is going to be sloping down. Pisulim nida ul hatat, they are disqualified for both the nida and for a hatat. Now, what's the reason for this? So the Mefashim explain that that even though, let's say from that point on, you're going to have meta'arovet, which is rainwater. Normally rainwater is kishera for a nida, but the problem is that since you have the hills of Yerushalayim over there, the rainwater is moving. And the halakha says that rainwater is only kishera for a nida when it's be'ashborin. Ashborin means when it's still. However, if it's moving, it's not kishera. Mem ma'ayan is kishera even if it's moving. So we're not worried about the moving of the mem ma'ayan. But after that point already with his hills, so the water is not still, and there's rainwater in there. So therefore, for nida, it's not kishera. Certainly, it's not going to be kishera for hatat, because it can only be coming from mem ma'ayan. Comes the Gemara and continues. So basically, we have a machloket. After the area of the dwelling of Yerushalayim, is it going to be kasher for nida or not? According to the first opinion, yes. According to the second opinion, no. Gemara says, Ketiv, it says the pasuk, Vayomer elai, hamayim ha'ele yotzim, el ha'gelila ha'kadmona. Pasuk says that these waters are going to go to the eastern Galilee. Where is this eastern Galilee? So the Gemara says, Ze yam shel samchu, which means the waters are going to reach the Sea of Samchu. What is that sea? So he explains here that the Sea of Samchu was a body of water known in ancient times as the Sea of Samachonutis, and sometimes as the waters of Merom, but more recently as Lake Hule, which is a lake located some 16 kilometers north of the Sea of Tiberias. In any event, this water is going to drain out into the Sea of Samchu. The verse continues, V'yaredu al haraba, and they're going to descend to the plain, Ze yam shel Tiberia. That's referring to the Sea of Tiberia. That would be the Kinneret. Uba'u hayamma, and they're going to come to the sea, Ze yam ha-melach. That's referring to the Dead Sea. El hayamma hamutza'im, to the expanding sea, Ze hayam ha-gadol. This is referring to the Great Sea, which we would call the Mediterranean. Now the Gemara says, "V'lama nekra shemo mutzaim?" Why do they call the Mediterranean the expanding sea? Keneged shtei pa'amim shiyatza. It's referring to the two times that it overflowed its banks. Echad bedor Enosh, one time in the generation of Enosh, the generation worshipped Avodah Zarah. Ve'echad bedor Palaga, and then yet another time in the generation of Palaga that also the people worshipped Avodah Zarah. So both those generations, the Mediterranean overflowed and flooded those generations. It wasn't a flood like in the times of Noah. It was more of a local situation that just flooded out those communities that were worshipping the Avodah Zarah. The Gemara elaborates. Rabbi Elazar b'shem Rabbi Hanina, Barishona, the first time, meaning during the times of Enosh, Yatsa ad Kalabria. The water overflowed until it reached Kalabria. So he explains that's a region in the extreme southeastern part of the Italian peninsula on the heel of the boot of Italy. Okay, that was where it went. It's Calabria. Ubeshiniya yatsa ad kipe barbaria. And in the time of Dora Palaga, it actually reached and overflowed to the Barbary coast, which is on the northern coast of Africa, extending from west of Egypt to the Atlantic Ocean. So he explains over here that initially Africa and Europe were one landmass. They were attached. But as retribution for the sins of the generation of Enosh, civilization was separated by the Atlantic Ocean, which expanded eastward, at first reaching Calabria and later the Barbary coast. So according to this opinion, they're learning that the Great Sea was not the Mediterranean. They're learning it was actually Oceanus, which is the Atlantic Ocean. So we have different opinions over here. What does it mean in the Gemara when it says the Yama Hamutzaim, where it says Zeha Yam Hagadol? In any event, that's the borders. How the sea overflowed actually twice. Comes the Gemara and says, Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Hanina. Different view. Barishona yatsa ad kipe barbaria. The first time the sea overflowed, it was until it reached the Barbary coast. Bashiniya yatsa ad Akko v'ad Yafo. And the second time it overflowed until it reached Akko and Yafo, because the pasuk says ad po tabo v'lo tosif. Until here you shall reach and no further. So they're learning like from the pasuk that says ad po, as if it says ad Akko tabo, that you'll go until Akko v'lo tosif and not go further. Ufo yashit pigon galecha. Ufo, they're learning as if it says ad Yafo, and until Yafo ashit gon galecha, your waves will be flaunted, which means the sea expanded all the way until Akko ad Yafo. So the Gemara says, Niha yama rabba v'yama demelcha. Says, I understand that you want to tell me that this water, the spring of water, is going to reach the Great Sea and the Dead Sea. Why? Bishvil lematekan. In order to make their waters sweet. It seems those waters are salty. So the waters of the Beit HaMikdash are going to sweeten these waters. However, yama de Tiberia, yama de Samchu, those waters are sweet already. So why would these waters have to go into those waters? They're sweet already. Gemara says, Lerabot degatam. In order to increase their fish, it seems that there'll be more species of fish in these sweet waters now. Dichtiv be lemina tehye degatam. Literally, to its species will be their fish, meaning lemine minim teye degatam. There's going to be a multitude of new species of fish in those waters as a result of the new influx of waters. And the Gemara shows us that there are certain areas that have many fish. Tani, Amar Rabban Shimon Gamliel, Maaseh she'alakti letzaydan. He says, one time I went to Sidon, ve'viu lefanai yoter mishlosh meot minei dagim betamchoi echad. And they brought for me in one plate over 300 fish, different species. So therefore you see that there are places in the world that do have many species. So they're saying these waters are going to be similar to that. So the Gemara now says, ve'nirpu hamayim besotav ugba'av velo yirafe'u lemelach nitanu. Now regarding these waters, it says, and the waters will become sweetened, its swamps and its pools, and they will not become sweetened, they will be set aside for salt. So have you make up your mind, the pasuk, are these waters going to sweeten or are they not going to sweeten? In the beginning of the pasuk it says they're going to sweeten the other waters, and then the end of the pasuk says velo yirafe'u, they're not going to sweeten. The Gemara says no, ketiv. The Gemara asks the question, Ketiv v'nirpu amayim, ve'at amar v'lo yirafu amayim. In the same pasuk you say that the waters are not going to sweeten, will not become sweetened. Gemara says, Makom hu ushmo v'lo yirafu. Gemara says, no. The waters are definitely going to become sweetened. But there's a certain place that the name of the place is called lo yirafu. That's the name of the place. And in that place, the waters are not going to become sweetened, because you're going to need a certain place to get your salt from. If all the waters in the region become sweet, where are you going to get the sea salt? So therefore it says, in the place that's called Velo Yirafe'u, it's going to remain salty. So therefore it's not a contradiction. Comes Gemara and says, Ketiv. It says, Ve'al ha-nachal ya'aleh al-sefato mizeh u-mizeh, kol etz ma'achal lo yibol aleu, ve'lo yitom priyo, la'chodashav yibakir. She's along the stream. There will rise on its bank, on the side, all types of food trees, its leaf will not wither, nor will its fruit give out by its mouth. It will yield a new crop, and it says it will yield a new crop by its months. So now the Gemara is going to discuss that the beracha of this water is going to cause the crop to ripen much quicker than normally. Tanu, we learned in the Braita. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, Lefi she'be'olam hazeh tevu'ah osa l'shisha chodashim. Normally, it takes wheat to grow 6 months. V'ilan oseh l'shnem asar chodesh. And it takes a tree to produce fruit 12 months. But in the future, hatevu'ah osa l'chodesh echad. That the wheat is going to become ripened and grow in a single month. So you see, that's going to be 1/6 of its time. Ve'ilan oseh l'shnei chodashim. And for that matter, the same ratio is going to be to the fruit trees. That instead of once every 12 months, it's going to produce once every 2 months. My ta'ama, where do they learn this from? From the pasuk that we just read. La chodashav yibakir. La chodashav is plural, meaning it'll produce new fruits, la chodashav, every 2 months. And that's as a result of these special waters that are emanating from the Beit HaMikdash. They're going to cause the fruit to ripen and grow much faster. A different view. Normally the wheat grows in 6 months. Ve'ilan oseh l'shtem asar chodesh, right? And the trees grow, produce fruit every 12 months. Aval atid lavo, hatevu'ah osa l'chamisha asar yom. That it's only going to take 15 days for the wheat to grow. V'ilan oseh l'chodesh echad. And for that matter, it's only going to take the trees to produce for 1 month. Shechen matzinu she'asa tevu'ah b'mei yo'el l'chamisha asar yom. Because we have a precedence. In the time of the prophet Yo'el, there was a famine. And it says in the pasuk that it didn't rain until Nisan, and vekarav mimenu haomer, and the omer was brought on time. Now the omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan. That means the first rain came on the 1st of Nisan, and already they were able to cut the omer by the 16th of Nisan. That means it must have grown in 15 days. So you see, just like in the times of Yoel, there was a miracle that wheat grew in 15 days, that's going to happen la'atid lavo as well. My ta'ama, what's the proof that it only grew in 15 days? So Sion gilu v'simchu b'Hashem Elohechem. The children of Sion were happy in their God, they rejoiced. Ki natan lachem et ha-more l'staka. Because God gave them the rain, more, it's like yore, that's the first rains. Ve'yored lachem geshem more u'malkosh. Both rains, the strong rains and the soft rains of Yoreh Malkosh Barishon, in the first month. And what does it say after that? That they were able to cut the Omer. So therefore we see that it grew in a miraculous time of only 15 days. Comes the Gemara and says now, Uma Mikayim Rabbi Yoseh Lachadashav Yibakir. Yeah, but what does he mean? We just learned the Pasuk that says Lachadashav Yibakir. Lachadashav is plural. That Lachadashav is going to take 2 months for fruit to produce, where he says it's going to only produce every month. It's going to produce. How does he learn the plurality of the pasuk lachodashav, which is mashma every 2 months? So the Gemara says bechol chodesh bechodesh yeh bevaker. Lachodashav means not in 2 months, but every month, month after month, they are going to produce a new crop. And the pasuk continues va'aleu l'trufa. The leaves of the tree are going to be for healing. Rabbi Hanan Amar, Tarpe Matzitz Aleh, which means the person who sucks the leaves will be considered to him as food. Tarpe, the Pasus Va'alu Litrufa, they're learning it as if it was written with a tet, which is terif. Terif is food. Va'alu Litrufa. the actual leaves themselves will be like sustaining, they'll be like mazon. Well, you just have to suck on the leaves themselves and they'll give a person sustenance. Utraf mezona. Right? And the root will also be for sustenance. Which means if a person sucks the root of the tree, he'll also give him like a sustenance of food. Correct. Comes Gemara and says, Rabu Shmuel say, Had Amar lehatir pesh shel ma'alan. One said that when you eat the leaf, it'll have the power to open up the upper mouth, which means the leaves will restore the appetite of those that had lost the desire to eat. Which means you're going to just suck on the leaves and it'll open up your appetite. Or, like we're going to learn, it's going to have the ability to cure the mute. Meaning, peshel ma'la. The hadama latir peshel matan. Or some say it's going to have the ability to open up the lower mouth, which means the bowels. That if a person is constipated, so he'll able to go to the bathroom just by sucking on these leaves. Alternatively, like we're going to see, it refers to the womb of a lady, the lower mouth. That ladies that were not able to conceive, they'll just suck on these special leaves, and they'll automatically be able to conceive. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Hanina v'Rabbi Yoshua ben Nevi, Had Amar lehatir pe'akarot. One said that the leaves have the power to open the mouths of the barren ones. That's the peshel mata. The had amar latir pe'ilimim. And some say that they have the ability to open up the mouths of the mutes. So obviously over here we have a mahloket. The first set of Tanaim that we mentioned on this subject obviously hold that the power of these leaves are not supernatural. They're either a laxative or they give a person an appetite. Whereas according to these opinions over here, we see they actually have miraculous powers to them, that they also have the ability to cure mute people and also cause ladies to conceive. Comes the Gemara and continues. At motze b'sha'a she'ala Nebuchadnezzar lekan. When Nebuchadnezzar entered and came to Eretz Yisrael, ba v'yashav lo b'dofne shel Antiochia. He came and stationed himself on the outskirts of a place called Antioch, which they explained that would be southern Turkey. The present day. V'yatz'a Sanhedrin gedolah l'kratto. So the great Sanhedrin came out to greet Nebuchadnezzar. V'amra lo, the Sanhedrin asked him, Higi azman habayit hazeh liharev? Has the time of the Bet HaMikdash come to be destroyed? Meaning, did you come to destroy the Bet HaMikdash? Amar lahen, oto shemlachti alechem tenu li. The one that I appointed to be the king over you, I want you to hand him over to me. V'ani olech, and I will go. Ba'o v'amru lo lehoyachin melech Yehuda. So they went to Yehoyachin, Melech Yehuda, again, he was one of the last kings to rule in Yehuda. Right? He was called Yehoyachin, also known as Yechoniah. He was the nephew of Tzidkiah HaMelech, the son of Yehoyakim. In any event, the rabbis of the Sanhedrin went to Yechoniah and they told him, Nebuchadnezzar ba'ilach. Well, Nebuchadnezzar wants you. Kevan she'shama mehem kach, when he heard this, Natan maftechot shel Bet HaMikdash, he took the keys of the Bet HaMikdash with him, ala legago shel Hechal, he went to the roof of the Hechal, amar lefanav, and he said in front of Borei Olam, Reboro shel Olam, Master of the Universe, l'sha'avar ayinu ne'emanim lecha, in the past we were faithful to you, and therefore you entrusted the keys of the Bet HaMikdash with us. But now it seems that we're not faithful anymore. Your keys are hereby returned to you. Which means he threw the keys back up Kadosh Baruch Hu. Tanina Moraim, we have a machloket on this. Hadamar zirakan ve'od lo yardu. Some say he threw them up and they have not come down. Which means, as if God agreed to what he was saying, that you know, it's time to give back the keys, and therefore the keys never landed. And one rabbi says, V'hadamar ba'a kimin yad untalatan miyado. That the likeness of a hand actually emerged from heaven and actually took back the keys. As if to say that the Jewish people do not deserve to serve in the Beit HaMikdash anymore. Kivan shira'u kol chorei Yehuda ken. Once all the noblemen of Yehuda saw that God's displeasure with the Jewish people and their service in the Beit HaMikdash, alu lerosh gagotehen v'naflu umetu. So they went up to their rooftops and they jumped off and died, committed suicide. Hadau dechtiv. This is what it's written. Masa geh zayon. Ma lach efo ki alit kulach legagot. Teshuot medea ir homiya. James, the prophet says, a prophecy about the valley of vision, Yerushalayim. What has happened to you now that you have all ascended to the rooftops? You have been full of commotion, a tumultuous city, an exuberant town. Your slain are not victims of the sword, nor casualties of war. The valley of vision is referring to Yerushalayim, since all eyes used to be on Yerushalayim, Mesos Kol Ha'aretz. That's why it's called the valley of vision. Which means the Pasuk is saying that the noble ones, they were not slain in battle or war, but they died by ascending to the roofs and committing suicide. The Gemara continues. Halakha Gimal Mishnah Yud Gimal Shulchanot Hayu B'Mikdash. There were 13 tables in the Beit HaMikdash. Het Shel Shayish. There were 8 marble tables B'Beit HaMitbachayim in the slaughteringhouse. What do they do on these 8 tables? Sha'alehen maddihin et hakirabayim. On those tables, they would clean the insides of the animals that were slaughtered. Ubet b'ma'arav hakevesh. 2 were on the west side of the ramp that goes up to the mizbeah. Echad shel shayish ve'echad shel kesef. 1 was a marble table, and 1 was made out of silver. Al shel shayish, on the marble table, notin et evarim. They put the bones of the animal and the meat that is going to eventually be placed on the mizbeach itself. Ve'al shel kesef, and on the silver table, kili sharet. They would put all the vessels that were used in order to bring the korban. Ubet be'ulam. And 2 more tables were in the ulam, that was in the antechamber of the Beit HaMikdash, mibifnim. On the inside, al petach habayit, at the entrance. Echad shel shayis ve'echad shel zahav. 1 was marble and 1 was made out of gold. Al shel shayish, on the marble mizbeach, notnin lechem apanim b'chnisato. Now every Shabbat they would change the shulchan that was in the Kodesh. There was a shulchan. On it there were 12 loaves of bread. Those breads were called lechem apanim. They would change the table every Shabbat by putting new bread on it and taking off the old bread. Then the Kohanim would divide the old bread and eat it amongst them. So now it says when they would bring the new bread into the Beit HaMikdash, it says they would place the Lechem HaPanim on the marble table as you entered into the Beit HaMikdash. Ba'al Shel Zahav B'Yitziyato. Now the old bread that they took off, they would place it on the gold table on the way out. Now, the reason why they had to leave it on the gold table for a while is because you can't eat it until the Kohanim take what's called the Levona, which is the frankincense, which was actually on the Shulchan itself.
With the breads.
With the breads. And they would have to bring that on the Mizbeach. Only after the Levona was brought on the Mizbeach, now the 12 loaves, old loaves, are permissible to eat. So the process was like this. They went to the actual shulchan. They took off the old loaves. They brought it out to the entrance. They put it on the gold table. They let it sit there until the levona was brought. Now again, when they would enter the new loaves into the Beit HaMikdash, they would place them originally on the marble table. Now, what's the reason why the old bread specifically is on the gold table? So it says, Shema'alim ba'kodesh ve'lo meridim. Because the law is that when it comes to the things of Kiddusha, you can only go up in Kiddusha and you can't go down. Now the table that they were sitting on all week was a gold table. So when you take it off the gold table, you have to put it on a gold table. You can't take it from a gold table and put it on a marble table. You can't bring it down. Echad shel zahav mibifnim she'alav lechem panim tamid. The 13th table was actually the table of the lechem panim. That was inside the Hazarav, the Beit HaMikdash, or the Hechal of the Beit HaMikdash, where they actually had the Lechem HaPanim themselves. So this is the 13 tables that were in the Beit HaMikdash proper. Now let's read the Taklin Hatin. Taklin Hatin was stuff in the Mishnah. She'alehen madihin et hakarabayim. Right, the 8 tables that were in the butcher house, slaughtering house, was the tables that were used for cleaning the insides of the animals. Lashon Rabbeinu HaGaon v'chen apshat v'nitua haya sham. They also used to cut the meat on them. Ela shelezeh meshamesh yoter mekev ashim madichin alav umenach ala ad hakraba. They would also leave it on the tables until they were about to bring them to the mizbeach. Al shel shayish achar anitua mesadrin shame evarim ad shalom hakohanim. Now by the mizbeach, on the west side of the mizbeach, you had a table of marble. After they would cut the pieces up in their proper pieces, they would put it on the table until they were ready to bring it up the ramp to the mizbeah. All the kli sharet was taken out every day, so they would leave it on the silver table next to the mizbeah. Now, shel shayish notim lechem hapanim b'chnisato shemalim b'kodesh. Lachin b'yisiyato shel zahav v'tchilah shel shayish. Now, going into the Beit HaMikdash, also malim b'kodesh. The new loaves were originally placed on marble, and then eventually upgraded to the gold table that was in the Beit HaMikdash. Now the Gemara analyzes. Tani, we learned, al shel kesef. Our Mishnah said that the new breads are placed on the marble table. However, in the Braita, we have a different girsa, a different shita, I should say. The Shita of the Braita is that the new breads were actually placed on kesef, were placed on a silver table. It still works with Ma'alim Bakodesh, because still it went from silver to gold. So it comes out we have a machloket between the Mishnah and the Braita. The new bread for the new week, was it put on a marble table originally, or was it put on a silver table? The Mishnah Braita is going with the Shita that says it was a silver table. So the Gemara says, when we skip the parentheses, Rabbi Yosef b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzhak Rav Hananya mateba b'shem Rabbi Yohanan let kan shel kesef. He says no, the breads were not placed on kesef, on silver. Why? Mipnei shehu martiyah, because the silver conducts heat. The bread was hot when you brought it in, and therefore what's going to happen, you're going to put the hot bread, it's going to be put on the silver table, the silver's going to get hot, and that's going to cause the bread to spoil faster. But you place it on marble, so that would stop spoilage. So comes the Gemara and says, Lo chen tani ze echad min hanisim shenasu bebet hamikdash shekeshem shehu manichim oto chom kach hayu motzim oto chom. Which means the Gemara is asking a question. We know one of the miracles in the Beit HaMikdash was that the Lechem HaPanim would stay
hot and fresh
all week. So if it's going to stay hot and fresh all week, so what are we worried about spoiling? What are you worried about putting it on the silver table and it's going to spoil? And how do we know that it stayed hot all week? Shina Emad, Lasum Lechem Ham, Biyom Ilakeho. That when you took the Lechem off, it was like when you placed it. Just like when you placed it, it was hot. So too, when you took it off, it was hot. So what are you worried about putting it on a silver table that it's going to cause it to spoil? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Amar, En maskirin ma'asei nisim. You don't rely on miracles, which means you still have to act in the normal way that should happen. Gemara continues, Ba'un kume Rabbi Ila. They ask the question in front of Rabbi Ila. Lo haya sham lechem. Let's say they did not have, for some reason, new lechem panim. They didn't have a fresh batch of bread for the new coming week. They only had last week's bread. What's the question? Are you allowed to leave last week's bread on the table? Now the question is really like this. Because by Sunday morning, once already it waits overnight, it becomes pasul. Because the lechem panim has to be eaten by Motzei Shabbat. The next morning already it becomes notar. So it's pasul. So this question really is, are you allowed to keep lechem pasul on the table? Because it does say that there should always be bread on the table, tamid. Or do we say, no, when we say lechem on the table, it means lechem kasher. But if it's pasul, no. So that's the question. Is it better to keep lechem pasul on the table or not? So the Gemara says, Amalon ketiv v'natatala shuchan lechem panim lefanai tamid. It says you have to put bread on the table always. Lechem panim afilu pasul. The Gemara says, even if it's pasul, it's better than nothing. Keep it on the table. So that's that halakha. Gemara now says, Asara shulchanot asa Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the first Beit HaMikdash, he made 10 different tables. Dichtiv. Vayas shulchanot asara. He made 10 tables. Vayanach b'hechal hamisha miyamin v'hamisha misimol. In the echal, he put 5 to the right and 5 to the left. Now, in temar, if you're going to say, hamisha b'darom v'hamisha b'safon, now what does it mean right, left? So if you're going to tell me he put 5 on the north wall and 5 on the south wall, how could that be? V'alo ena shulchan kasher ela b'tzafon. We know that the table could only be on the north side. So you can't tell me that he put 5 against the north wall and 5 against the south, because that's, or let's say, even better, let's say that he lined them up north-south, the shulchanot. Let's say he lined them across. Okay? So you're going to have 5 tables coming from the north wall, and then you're going to have, at the midpoint, 5 tables going to the south, so the 5 tables that are closer to the south are going to be considered pasul. You know, the 5 to the north, the first 5 tables are still considered on the north side. So therefore the Gemara says, Shne'emar v'et ha'shulchan titen asel asafon. Mat tamud omar hamisha mimin v'hamisha misimol, ela hamisha miyamin shulchan shel Moshe v'hamisha misimolo. Meaning, you had Moshe's table in the middle, on the north side, and then 5 on one side, and 5 on the other side, but all on the north side going east-west. Right. Meaning you place the tables east-west, so it's all on the right side, meaning the north side, it's just Moshe's table in the middle. And the Gemara says, Afapikin, lo haya misadet ela b'shel Moshe b'lvad. But the table that they used to put the lechem apanim was only Moshe's. So the other 10 were really decorative. But still, the Hiddush of the Gemara is they had to be on the right side.
Yeah, of course.
Which means even though you didn't use them, but they still had a din of a shulchan, they had to be on the north side. Shne'emar et ha'shulchan asher alav lechem ha'panim. The table that the lechem ha'panim was on, which is Moshe's table. Rabbi Yoseh ber Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yoseh ber Yehuda argues. And he says, Al kulan ayam mazdir. No, they used to put the lechem ha'panim on all the tables. Now the way that she understands this is in Menachot, not that they put on all the tables simultaneously, but they would rotate the tables. Now one week they would put it on Moshe's table, the other week they would put it on a different table. So eventually all 10 tables got used for the lechem. So that's a fantastic machloket. Did they use only one table in the Beit HaMikdash, or did they use all of them through alternating? Shnei Emar. Now how did you know they used all the tables? Because it says, Et ha'shulchanot, the tables, va'alehem lechem apanim. And on them, implying that more than one table was used. The Taklin Hatin says that this sugya, incidentally, is in Masechet Menachot on Sadiqet Amud Bet and Sadiqet Amud Aleph, and that's the conclusion of this Gemara.